In an abandoned underground city at the Spanish coast near Malaga, I found a USB stick containing 300 random movies, from arthouse to weird, from obscure to notorious. Now, in lockdown, it is time to watch and discuss them all in an international podcast project. Two Turks and a German, two filmmakers and a mystery man. Welcome to Mysterium Pictorum.
Welcome, welcome to Mysterium Pictorum. This is the end of the year special episode for which we watched a Christmas movie. It's the second day of Christmas today, and I mean, isn't this wonderful? We're here, all three of us together, in one room. It's the time of the pandemic, and still, we managed to record this episode, all three of us together in one room. Yaren wants to say something. He's creepily close to me. I'm not used to this. Usually, Yaren is a voice from far away that comes out of my laptop, and I have like one earphone in my ear, in one of my ears, and I can occasionally hear him, but now he's just leaning in to speak. What do you want, bearded man?
I was just gonna say, it's a second day of Christmas miracle.
And I wanted to say, isn't it the third day of Christmas in Germany?
There's the 24th, the 25th, and the 26th. And the 24th isn't actually Christmas. It's Heiligabend. That means holy night. It's the night before Christmas.
It has a song.
But isn't Abend evening and not night?
It's the holy evening in German, but it's holy night in English. So that's the night before Christmas. I think Jesus was born, was pressed into this world at night, late at night. And then the 25th and the 26th, those actually are the Christmas days. You will have noticed, Nisan, the 24th, the shops are open.
Are they?
Yes, on the 24th. And then the 25th and the 26th are holidays, and the shops are not open on those days. Isn't that fascinating?
I mean, I guess you wouldn't give a holiday for Mary's crowning day.
What's Mary's crowning day?
The vagina beginning to dilate and everything since he popped up.
Oh, yes.
25th.
The 24th is the day on which they were going through Nazareth and looking for a hotel to stay at. Oh, you guys.
Very last minute they did that?
Yes, of course. Oh, you didn't know. Oh, let me tell you the story of Jesus.
Oh. We could also talk about the movie.
Yaren, who are you?
I'm Yaren, still. And that's all you need to know.
Yeah, that's
from Hamburg.
True, yeah. It's actually all I know. Nisan, who are you?
I'm Nisan from Hamburg. And I, you know.
That was a ballsy statement. Who are you? You know. You know. Come on. what are you asking me?
I think if we have like the 10 same listeners, they know what I do. I feel like every episode it's more interesting if we say something new about ourselves. So our listeners, I think, know my star sign, that I'm 30, that I'm an actress, that I love watching Gilmore Girls. I should just explore something new. My shoe size is 36.
All right. And my name is Lars Henriks. I'm a visionary writer-director from Hamburg, Germany. You can find out stuff about me, I guess, in the internet. Look it up on Wikipedia. I'm on TikTok sometimes, occasionally. I recently made a new TikTok video.
Oh, speaking of Christmas, our newest movie, which is a Christmas movie, is Until the 10th January, we said, on Vimeo for free.
Let's talk about the film we watched for this episode. It's called A Blast of Silence. First of all, how did we watch it? I mean, that was a whole odyssey, right? Until we watched it. So we watched it, all three of us together. First, Nisan and I just wanted to watch it plainly over breakfast this morning. And we messaged you, Yaren, about it. You came from another place to us. We said,
from God's bosom.
Yes, from
it cometh.
We texted Yaren that we were about to watch it because we thought you had watched it last week. What happened there?
I showed the trailer to my friend and I couldn't convince him to watch it.
But like, wasn't the trailer exciting?
It was super exciting, and I would be actually ashamed of myself if it actually ended up watching it. It's not a good movie to recommend to anyone, which answers your second question.
Then we didn't watch it over breakfast, Nissan and I. We just started it. And I mean, it starts out well enough. We thought, well, this could be good. Plus, oh, this is clearly a Christmas movie. And then later on, you came and we ate and watched the movie. Now, we had some projection issues because Nissan had lost the cable. Yaren doesn't want me to tell this fascinating story about the cables and the projector and how
the VPN.
Yes, it crashed. Yeah,
and also the old laptop, which went warm and we couldn't watch it on it anymore. So we had to find the cable for the new laptop.
All right. But it worked out in the end. We watched the movie, even though all our technical equipment kept crashing on us and saying, we don't support you watching this. This is very boring. So
it's God's most famous day, so he's have to show some miracles.
So how did you like it, Yaren?
I think at some point I was the only one actually watching it.
No, you weren't. Just because we missed the fisherman, the mythical fisherman. I still don't believe you that there was a fisherman in this.
Well, anyway, as I mentioned before, if you want to learn, you know, excruciating detail on gun maintenance, definitely watch this.
And I mean, I don't even think we learned that much because he did the same thing three times.
Well, I mean, I still didn't know you have to do those three things.
So yeah.
Something new.
Boring, you say. Nissan, how did you like it?
Well,
as much as you've seen the movie, like not the whole thing, but
I watched the movie, but like, I say that was the second film noir I watched and I don't like it. And they said, no, the first one, Alphaville, is not a film noir. And I said, yes, it is.
And then they said, no, it isn't. Okay, so you didn't like it.
No, I don't like film noir, but I liked Sin City.
Yeah, okay, so I actually had high hopes when it started. There's a voiceover. It starts out original enough. A guy gets born and stuff. Then we get introduced to the one fun character of this movie. He's early on, Ralphie. He's fun. There's a fun scene. And then the movie just runs out of steam. It gets so repetitive and nothing happens and nothing happens for so long. I didn't like it either in the end, but I think when it started, it did have potential. Yeah, and
like first half an hour is great. It just hooks you in. And then I guess the director, writer ran out of ideas.
It started and I thought, oh, cool, it's a Christmas movie. And I even thought people like this pseudo-contrarian take, well, Die Hard is a Christmas movie, which, yeah, obviously it takes place over Christmas. Christmas is a plot point in Die Hard. Obviously, it's a Christmas movie.
Have you guys seen Solar Opposites?
No, what's that?
You know Rick and Morty?
Oh, I know of it.
It's the same guys.
Community.
Yeah, Community. So is it Dan Harmon?
No, it's the other guy. He made another animation and he talks extensively about that, exactly that, but Die Hard is what constitutes as a Christmas movie. I mean, in those terms, yes, this is a definitively Christmas movie.
This whole Die Hard is a Christmas movie thing, I think is something that feels like a fresh and original tale for Gen Xers. It's like this very lazy pop culture opinion, like something that you could encounter in a Tarantino movie.
Sure. I mean, no, who gives a shit too, though?
At first I thought, oh, this might be a nice contrarian Christmas movie to bring up in the future. But no, it's bad. Let me still sum up the story. So in the beginning of the movie, what are you doing?
I'm going to smoke when you sum up the story.
Yeah, the mystery man is going to smoke substances on our balcony now. All of that while I am trying to sum up the story. So let me try and sum up the story. Hitman Frankie is born in the beginning of this movie. Then there is a time jump and Frankie arrives in New York via train and a voiceover tells us that he now will kill someone. He's a hitman. He meets a guy on a boat who tells him, I think, who to kill. He gives him some pictures and I guess some money. Then he goes and looks at his target. He looks at his house. He talks about how he has woman lips and wears a mustache to hide that fact, which is really funny. At that point, I really thought this is going to be a fun movie. Then he walks around in New York, which is a first warning sign. But at this point, I thought, well, this is, we can look at New York, old New York. That's interesting. That's interesting. He walks around New York and then he meets Ralphie to buy a weapon off of him. Ralphie is a morbidly obese fun guy who owns some rats. He has rats in cages and feeds them, and he loves them dearly. And Ralphie haggles with him. He wants a lot of money to give him a gun and a silencer. But then the two of them come to an agreement, and Frankie, our hitman, he leaves Ralphie on his own. These people just speak to each other really affectionately all the time, right? Frankie, Ralphie, this kind of name is very, very mafia. The mafia, they really like each other. They give each other pet names, and they touch each other a lot. We were speculating about Frankie's sexuality at several points during the movie. So there's some subtext there. Frankie then meets an old acquaintance. He does so on by accident. He doesn't want to meet an old acquaintance, but he does. And the two of them go to a party. There are several people who Frankie knows from his, I don't know, his former life, his past in New York. And this old acquaintance invites all of them to a party, apparently. And the two of them do something. Jaren said it's something that you did pre-internet. They call it a peanut race.
To clear that up, I didn't do it. That's not what people did for entertainment.
Yeah. So this is the word that Jaren knows. Pre-internet days, grown-ups would have peanut races, which means that they put peanuts on the ground, and then the two of them push the peanuts.
Which is hard to imagine, but you have to specify the peanuts still have their shells on them.
Okay, yeah.
When I first thought about it, how are you going to, you know, push a peanut with your nose?
Yeah, that's the crucial thing. They push the peanuts with their noses over the floor. And then it's about who reaches the target first. I don't know who won the peanut race. I missed this.
The other guy.
Frankie loses the peanut race. It's tragic.
See, I was the only one who watched the movie.
No, I remembered that a guy won it.
I mean,
they look very alike.
There were two women in this movie.
Yeah. And they didn't do the peanut race.
No, they weren't involved.
Wait, who was the second woman?
The cleaning lady who was... Yeah. I have my own life. All right. So up until this point, I was still kind of involved in the movie. I liked it. I liked the peanut race thing even. Because it's quirky. It's quirky. It's nice. So then Frankie goes, like his old acquaintance knows a person who is called Laurie. Laurie is a woman. And the narrator informs us that Frankie cannot remember the names of women, but he never forgot the name Laurie. Because it's important.
And then they all know each other from the orphanage.
Okay, from the orphanage. So then he goes to Laurie's home and attempts to rape Laurie. But he can't because he's too weak. What a loser. I lost all respect for him at that point. Laurie, of course, forgives him. He apologizes. And then he goes home. And then he walks through New York for a bit. And this is when I kind of lost interest. He walks around New York and he walks. And then he goes to a birthday party. It's the birthday party of his target. And at this birthday party, he sees Ralphie, who sees him too. And Ralphie then joins him on the toilet and says to him, well, I know now who you want to kill and I want more money. And then he says, I'm not going to give you more money, Frankie says. And then Ralphie says, well, if you won't give me more money and I hear that the person celebrating their birthday right now dies, you will have to give me some money because otherwise I will rat you out because I own rats. I'm a rat. Symbolism. I called that like the first scene we saw Ralphie.
You were waiting for that moment.
Yep. And it happened. Ralphie, that fat rat.
But was he a rat though?
Well, he was about to be. Did you listen to me?
I did. I listened to you. I also watched the movie, but maybe he was just bluffing.
Well, we never will know because Ralphie then after...
Because he was not so bright for a rat. He like let the door open.
So after threatening a contract killer about whom Ralphie knows that this person is good at killing people, Ralphie blackmailed. He blackmailed this contract killer who said, "You're in over your head. You're making me angry." After doing this, Ralphie went home and left his door open and then went to sleep. And now something not very surprising happens. Frankie goes into Ralphie's flat because the door is open. He brings an axe and then he strangles Frankie to death. I don't know why he brought the axe, but he brought an axe.
He tried to see. I watched the movie. I paid attention. He tried to kill him with the axe first. And he also like got his arm because Frankie's arm was bleeding.
Yeah, and that woke Frankie up.
Frankie woke up and he resisted.
Yeah.
And
anyone would wake up from an axe in the arm.
The axe went away and then they fought like real men.
Now that I think about it, he couldn't rape the woman, but he did best Ralphie. So he actually might be gay.
Yeah, and he's into bears, obviously. So after this riveting scene in which we lose the only really interesting character of the movie goes on. And I don't know why, but it does so for a while. So there's after this kill, there's more walking. Did you enjoy this particular walking?
No.
Okay, so there's more walking and then there's a phone call. He calls his...
And like, you know, some movies can bring stuff like that. For example, Nicholas Winding Refn, it's also exhausting, but he has like cool songs and cool lights and colors and cool actors.
Yeah, and this was black and white. What the fuck?
When they're just walking. And this was black and white and the music was... shit. And
oh, the music was so annoying.
Yeah. Bongo time.
There was a bongo player and he was featured so much. I don't know why we saw so many close-ups of the bongo player.
Like, also, by the way, the black and white thing is a joke, you know? Bellatar can bring it.
Yeah, through. There were scenes in this that Bellatar has handled so much better. Like, Bellatar at least moves his camera. Whatever. So, there's more walking and he walks to a telephone and he calls his employers and tells them, and I don't know why, but suddenly he really doesn't want to kill his target. He says he wants out.
Because he just killed the guy who was supposed to supply the gun. First, he doesn't have a gun. Second, there's heat on him now, so he wants to disappear.
Ah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. You know this kind of stuff because you're a secret agent, right?
I can neither confirm or deny that.
So now he wants out and apparently I don't know how I missed this because I swear I sat here, I had my eyes on the screen, I watched the movie, I didn't look away, but apparently now comes the scene with the fisherman. Yaren, who's the fisherman?
Fisherman is the naive guy who, you know, moves contraband around. So he was the guy who was getting the gun for Ralphie to sell to our guy. But now Ralph is dead, so he just meets the supplier directly. That's the fisherman.
So that happened. And then Frankie went to a flat, and that's the flat of the mistress of his target. He then talks to the second woman of the film, which she's not relevant. It's just a woman who's like women do.
Was like the other one relevant?
The other, of course, he tried to rape her, and then he thought about her all the time.
It was his salvation.
Yeah, she was important. He was in love with her.
Emotional arc.
But like, was she apart from him relevant?
No one was. Relevant apart from him, he was the main character. He was the protagonist.
No, I think Ralphie was the main character.
Well, Ralphie was dead at this point. At least she survived, I think. Yeah, then he went to the flat of the mistress of his target and prepared for his hit. And now comes the scene that Yaren was alluding to, in which he... does gun maintenance for 20 minutes. It really, really does take a while. We see it in a close-up. And then some orphans walk in a swastika, which also... that happened.
And I thought those guys were blacklisted for being communists. Are you sure about that?
Well, of course, they're communists. And in their view, orphans are Nazis, clearly.
Yeah. Okay. Any kid raised by the state is a Nazi.
Ah, that's clever. That's
I like deep. That.
Yeah. So he looks out of the window and there's an orphanage. And I think he was raised in an orphanage. He looks at the orphans, sort of melancholy. And then the orphans walk away and in a swastika, which random, but okay. His target enters the flat. He kills his target quickly and without much drama. Then he exits the flat and then two people follow him, two people who weren't introduced before, right?
I think it's his employers who gave the hit job.
Yeah, shit employers.
Yeah.
Were you ever killed by your employers?
Not yet, but it's not unlikely.
Okay. So then his employers follow him to a rural looking place, Long Island, as I read. And this scene was apparently shot during a real hurricane. It's a dramatic scene. They chase him. Chase scenes in this film, by the way, are always like these people walk at a leisurely pace, but behind each other. But no, he tries to get away. He throws himself into the water and they shoot him. And then he dies. The end.
You forgot the back and forth cuts of chases.
Wait, what?
For like 10 minutes, two people chasing each other. It keeps cutting back and forth between the two.
For the dramatic tension.
But you forget who was chasing.
Yeah, that was when Frankie chased Ralphie. And I think Ralphie also forgot that he was being chased because he then left his door open. What the fuck? Okay. So yeah, this is a Christmas movie. And regarding Christmas movies,
a nice coincidence that we watched a Christmas movie on our Christmas holiday.
Day of Christmas.
On the second day of Christmas.
It's our Christmas holiday together.
Yeah. We celebrated Christmas by watching this classic Christmas movie. It's amazing.
I'm thinking of converting to Christianity because of this movie.
Good luck with that. Yeah. We have a Christmas tree. We have a couple of Bibles. I can give you one.
I have one.
Oh, okay. Good. Christmas movie. Our Christmas movie is out. It's called COVID Metamorphosen. COVID Metamorphoses, but instead of the second S in the end of Metamorphoses, you just put an N. Then you have the German word for Metamorphoses, which is Metamorphosen. Kind of similar. COVID Metamorphoses, it's a movie taking, I don't know, cues from Ovid's Metamorphoses. You know, Ovid, COVID, funny. Couldn't resist. It's three people stuck in a flat together over Christmas during lockdown. One of them weirder than it might seem at first, but he seems kind of weird out of the gate. And then things get weird, right?
It was a good movie.
Thank you. Yeah, okay, so you can watch it for free on Vimeo. I think there will be a link in the description to this episode too. We would love to read your review on Letterboxd. I actually love that. I look at Letterboxd once a day. I click at all my movies and see if there's a new review. And if there's a new review, it will be a good day. There aren't many good days. So maybe go on Letterboxd, write a review, watch the movie.
It's like, even if the review is like really mean, that's a good day for you too.
Yeah, because then I stalk
because
the person.
Those make me cry.
No. Mean reviews make me stalk that person and find out how that person is stupid and a Nazi anyway.
No, you don't.
No, but I forget bad reviews.
I mean, you are friends with a special agent, so I'm your sources.
No, but I forget mean reviews. Like, they're mostly stupid, actually. Like mean reviews. Like they would hurt me if they would bring up points that I don't like about the movies. Like, I could write a mean review about any movie that we made, a really mean one.
Me
and, when people hit on the points that I don't like about them, sometimes before a premiere, I will be scared that people will ask me specific questions about the movie that I think I would have a hard time answering. That never happens.
Like, we prepared, we were scared that. Because
okay, so we have a negative character in the film, and he's very, very scared of COVID.
And he's also from the 3D only one who takes it like seriously.
Yeah, and last year that was a kind of different thing. Plus, those anti-vaxxers and conspiracy people, they don't really happen in my reality. But I was prepared that people would ask, like, are you anti-vaxxers? Are you COVID deniers? Because your evil person is, or not evil person, but the negative character, he's sort of obsessed with COVID. He's
a threat. Like, we prepared a speech if a question like this comes up. But then so stupid questions came up.
Yeah, nobody asked that. No, that was a lovely Q&A. There were some intelligent questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, Jaden.
Yeah, I especially enjoyed the one about the cup.
Yeah, somebody asked why. Okay, let's not do this anymore because now people will not ask us stuff about the movies. Please watch the movie and write a review on Letterboxd, and I will not send Jaden to kill you. okay, so Christmas movies.
I also write an iTunes review for our podcast.
So many things.
I tried to tell you this for like a year now. Nobody uses iTunes anymore.
Write some review about the podcast. Let your friends know about this podcast where people ramble about other stuff, but not the movies.
Kind of our thing,
yeah.
Right? I feel like on our podcast episodes, we always talk like 10 minutes about the movie we watched and the rest of the 60 minutes about like shit.
Let's talk about the next random thing. Kevin, Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, which this movie reminded me of. Because you know, Home Alone also plays with mafia cliche, with gangster cliches. He's also in New York over Christmas, Home Alone 2. And they show us a lot of New York and New York landmarks, like Donald Trump, your employer, when he was young. And it's so similar in a way. This like
and also
and Last of Silence, so similar to Home Alone 2.
Also, Home Alone 1 and 2 has these film noir satires. Kevin is watching these movies, which are like this movie.
The second one too?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like fake. They were made for Home Alone. I always thought those movies exist and I wanted to watch them. But then I found out that they made it for Home Alone, and I think that's a quirky fact about the movie.
We know that Joe Dante and Martin Scorsese are big fans of this film. So why wouldn't Chris Columbus be a fan of A Blast of Silence?
For more Home Alone facts, follow these two on TikTok.
You don't like Home Alone?
I'm okay with it. I just saw that there's Home Alone 4.
Yeah, I saw that too on Letterboxd, but that looks like shit. Home Alone 3, is that with Macaulay Culkin?
No, but I did see it on theaters when I was, I don't know, 10.
Who plays the Macaulay Culkin role?
No idea.
Another Culkin?
No.
No.
Oh, why didn't they get another Culkin? There are so many Culkins.
I remember that one too. I watched it too and I was really disappointed because I was a huge Macaulay Culkin fan when I was a kid and when I was a teenager. And I still love him.
Yeah, he's amazing.
For some reason, he used to be very cute little kid. And it's okay to say that because I was a cute little kid too when I thought that. I'm no pedo. To very edgy, cool young boy. And when I thought that, I was a
very edgy, cool young girl.
Do you think Steve Buscemi is also hot?
No.
That's where he's going towards right now. Like,
now he's like a funny, cool man you want to hang out with.
Yeah, I want to hang out with Macaulay Culkin. I will say, at this point, Macaulay, we know you're in the audience. Please, or any other Culkin. We will take any Culkin. but Macaulay Culkin, please join us. Join the podcast. We will talk about a movie of your choosing from the list, obviously.
Yeah, not Home Alone, though.
No, that's not on the list.
But, like, he has like a Home Alone a new short film, like he made that a couple years ago, where he plays Kevin as an
off that's cab a YouTube
driver.
That's a YouTube sketch.
Yeah, okay, we're gonna show it to Jaren. He doesn't know that.
Okay, so A Blast of Silence is in the Criterion Collection. They released it with a making of thingy. It's a very independent movie from New York. It was made by, like, I think it was picked up by Universal. This is very much a thing that you could do with no budget, right? Because nothing happens.
Yeah, and there's just a bunch of walking around and gun maintenance.
But like film noir, I guess, is a genre that you could pull off without a budget.
Sure.
We should make a film noir, maybe.
Yeah, but let's first make our horror films.
Yeah, I want to make exclusively horror
films.
Noir. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Alan Barron is the writer, director, and lead actor of this film. He apparently put this together independently in New York. It got picked up by Universal.
He also wrote like a lot about the main character. He plays himself, how attractive he is.
Yes,
that,
which is
was
a Tommy.
Weird.
It's a bit of a Tommy Wiseau move, but he didn't want to play that role himself. He had actually approached another actor, and then he didn't find anyone in his price range but himself to play it. I know that kind of problem. This sometimes happens. It's awkward, but what can you do if you're the best actor you know personally? So Alan Barron, his character is a bit rapey, and then I looked up Alan Barron. I wanted to know what he was up to after that. He's still alive. He's still kicking. He's in his 90s now. He mainly was a TV actor, and he got Me Too'd in 2018, which I think is like 40 years after or 30 years after his professional career ended. Yeah, 38. I think the last things he directed were like 87. So 30 something years after his professional career ended, he got Me Too'd. He's a bad man. Apparently, he's a sexual predator, allegedly.
Yes, it was really random that he wrote this almost rape scene as a romantic thing.
He didn't really write it as a romantic thing. To me, he wrote it as, to show how pathetic the character was.
I think he was just trying to hide the fact that he was a closeted gay.
There was so much of that context, yeah, right?
That rape was also super random. Like, you don't try to rape, in my mind, a woman you don't see for 30 years and suddenly... Oof.
Yeah, no, you only rape people you're close to.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, plus, like, how weak was he? But let's not discuss his raping technique. I mean, fans of rape should rather... should rather watch the... the Japanese film series Rape Man parts 1 through 7. This is a thing. This is an actual thing. This is a Japanese film series from the 90s, and it's called Rape Man.
Don't give rapists like tips. Now they're gonna Google Rape Man.
I don't think Rape Man gives you good rape technique.
You know.
Well, I haven't watched it, but I have read an extensive article about the first movie. You guys, Rape Man is the thing. That's like a Japanese superhero franchise. It's supposed to be funny, but like, come on. It's this guy, and he like people can go to him if they have been wronged by women, and he will go to those women and rape them. He says, and this is a quote from the movie, he's righting wrongs through penetration. It's the whole thing. It has 7 parts, and I will have to watch it at some point because, good Lord, this exists. So Alan Barron would probably like it. But interestingly, this movie has a writer, Waldo Salt, wrote the narration, and Lionel Stander delivered the narration. Both of those were blacklisted at the time.
For being rapists?
No, communists. You didn't get blacklisted for being a rapist in Hollywood until very, very recently.
You don't technically get blacklisted. You just go away for 2 years and then come back.
Exactly. And it only happens, like, you can only get Me Too'd if you're not successful. Like, Harvey Weinstein, had he been as successful and important as he was in the 90s, would not have gotten Me Too'd.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, Woody Allen and...
Yeah, all those guys were over anyway. And afterwards they say, by the way, rapist. Film noir, Sin City was better, right?
Sure.
Not a fan?
It's been so long since City. they broke my heart, Sin City.
The Why? Whole
series, trilogy, I guess. If the
There's two. Came out.
So that's the thing. Sin City was the first movie ever who announced was going to have a second and a third one before the first one came out, like Avatar did after that.
But hadn't Lord of the Rings already come out when Sin City came? And that had announced that there would be two others?
Yeah, but I mean, Lord of the Rings was known. It was three books. They said it's going to be three movies.
Sin City is 1,000 books.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. Sin City. Go on.
Anyway, so, and then they never released the second one until like almost recently, 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
So that broke my heart.
So you liked the original Sin City?
I did.
Yeah, see, it's a good
I was at the right age for it. Jessica Alba, boobs, all that.
Yeah, I was also at the right age for it. I don't know who was in it, but
two.
There was a yellow guy.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis.
And Elijah Wood.
And the girl from Gilmore Girls, Rory, was there too. She was one of the prostitutes.
Oh, yeah. She was hot.
Yeah. She's,
no. Okay.
She's pretty, love.
Let's not discuss it. This because
Stop Gilmore Girls podcast.
Sin City is doing film noir on steroids. Sin City is like the film noir pastiche. Then yes, we've watched Alphaville, which is sort of an anti-film noir. But I think this was my first film noir and I don't know if I'm into these. I know that Fritz Lang made a couple of film noir, so I might have to watch those. Nissan, you're not a fan. Yaren, film noir, apart from this one, how much?
I haven't seen much. I've seen, I guess, the more recent ones. Neo film noir, I would say.
Oh yes, that was a thing on the Criterion channel, right?
Maybe. I'm not, I just made it up, but possibly.
Neo-noir.
Okay.
And there's also Japanese noir.
Like early 2000s.
I can show you on the Criterion channel.
Early 2000s.
Let's watch a couple of film noir together.
Shut up! Nisa's dying because of you. So, no.
I am sorry. So yeah, the last scene was shot during an actual hurricane, but I said that already. You guys, you've spent some time in New York. Actually, the two of you both together. Did you recognize anything? Your mouth is full with ice. So
yes, Yaren.
Oh, Nissan. Yeah. Did you recognize anything?
There was one scene, one frame where he was under a bridge. And I think I was there too.
You were under that bridge? Were you drug dealing, Nisa?
No. I was waiting with the other Nissan who lived in New York. That's how Yaren and I met. We had a common friend.
There was a mix-up. Yaren was looking for Nissan and he found the wrong Nissan.
I started yelling Nissan in Central Station and just she showed up.
There's a whole Disney Channel comedy in here. The two Nissans. The Olsen twins should come back from retirement and play the Nissans in brown face.
So anyway, I was there with Nissan and her roommates and we were golfing or so.
Golfing?
Something like really...
How rich are you? So you were staying at your friend's flat in Manhattan.
No.
And then you were golfing. It wasn't in Harlem. You always say, it wasn't Harlem. It's this poor part of town. And then Yaren says, no, it was in Manhattan.
It's almost Manhattan.
Okay, so you were staying in the middle of Manhattan and you were golfing. And then what? Oh, and under the bridge. You were golfing under the bridge that was seen in this. Why were you golfing?
Trying to hit the poor people with golf balls.
All right. Yaren, did you recognize anything in this movie?
I can't say that I did. Because they didn't, apparently they didn't have money enough for like establishing shots of the city.
Yeah, there was a lot of like hidden camera, I think. Mm-hmm. It looked a lot like Jungfernstieg in Hamburg looks right now. It looked actually kind of lame. Like you always hear about New York, this wild city, and it never sleeps. And when I was in New York, it was a city that slept a lot. Thank you very much. Berlin never sleeps. New York doesn't even have amphetamines. Kind of boring. Like walk through Steindamm in Hamburg. That feels dangerous. The Bronx doesn't feel dangerous. So I was bored, but I think that's Rudy Giuliani's fault. Fuck you, Rudy Giuliani. And apparently, like in the 80s and early 90s and the 70s, it was incredibly interesting. But this is from the 60s, and this just looked like posh Hamburg. Does anybody, any of you, have to say anything in the defense of New York? Boring city.
I like New York. Why do you hate on the, you know, nightlife in general?
I don't know. Maybe I was at the wrong places. Nissan is eating. So this is now a podcast with two dudes talking about old movies, like every other movie podcast.
Wait.
This is why so few women are involved in the
films. Shut up.
Because they eat during podcasts.
Or maybe because the man talks too much. I like New York too, but I know what you mean. But maybe, I mean, we know like the wild nightlife of Hamburg or Berlin, of course, 2 years ago before this shit pandemic. If we would live there, maybe we knew more edgy stuff too. We were looking in New York for drugs and we couldn't find them.
Yeah, that was annoying. Larry Tucker, the guy who played Ralphie, he is a Golden Globe nominated actor, and later he was an Oscar nominated writer for Someone and Someone and Someone and Someone. That's a classic movie.
Is he alive?
He's not alive. He died in 2001 of multiple sclerosis and some additional cancer. But he was very old. He wasn't very old. He was in his 60s. But I mean, looking at him in this movie, I am surprised he didn't die earlier.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the guy looked super obese.
Yeah, morbidly obese. But still, very good actor, very unusual character, especially for the time. It's complicated to do this between the living room and the balcony because substances are being smoked. Let's take a short break. All right, so we ran out of steam there. That was our discussion on the movie. Yeah, we didn't like it a lot. I mean, there was still, I think there was some stuff to appreciate in there. Blah-de-blah. Janen, what's your favorite quote?
The narrator says about the, what's his name? The target?
Yeah, I don't know. The target, something Italian.
So the narrator is his inside voice and he's trying to hate the character that he's going to kill. And it says he has a mustache to hide the fact that he has lips like a woman.
Yeah, that was I think the best quote by far in this movie. So yeah, okay, that was a blast of silence. And before we leave you to it for this year, we thought we were going to do like a little throwback. We would look at the year and have like our little resume. We don't want to bore you. We don't want to take too much of your time. So every one of us will first talk about their three favorite films among the films that we covered on this podcast on Mysterium Pictorum. Three favorite Mysterium Pictorum year one films. And then we are also going to talk, each and every one of us, about our three favorite films that we watched apart from this podcast and that we would recommend to people listening to this. So number three of your Mysterium Pictorum films. Nissan, you go first.
A ghost story.
Why a ghost story? What did you like about it?
I liked it that it was so simple and so big at the same time. First it felt like, oh, I could do that too. And then it was like very, you know, like
intimate universalism. We called it.
We even had a great term for it. It was, yes, I mean, it was very cheesy, cliched thoughts we all have in our generation. We all had those kind of talks, I assume, but it's not like I heard it for the first time, like those nihilistic monologues. But I thought it was so interesting that this guy made a movie about, not about being dead or dying or being scared of death, but about like being there but nobody gives a shit. Nobody sees you and nobody being not there.
So it's almost like it's more about depression than about death.
It's like he was not, the movie didn't, for me, didn't express the fear of dying. It expressed the fear of not existing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it was a pretty quintessential millennial movie. I really, really loved it too. And I loved The Green Knight too. But Jaren, you don't love David Lowery in general.
I don't. I think he should just stop.
Okay. Oh, that's harsh. That's harsh. Why?
No, he's a okay director, but the story he chooses to tell, I don't think it's that engaging as he thinks it is. And I think Nissan put too much, I don't know, attention to it, where he didn't need. But it was an okay movie. It was one of the better ones of the selection of this year's Mysterium Pictorum.
Okay, okay. After this attack, Jaren, what's your number three?
My number three is, I'm not going to be that elaborate on why I chose this, but it's Antiporno.
Why?
Because I had seen it before and it's more sentimental. I think it's more personal in the sense that when I first saw it, I thought of it almost completely differently than when I saw it for the podcast. And it's like, I think I saw it when it first came out in 2016 and now this year. So it was interesting to see the change of, you know, thinking about the movie.
So it's a film that you can watch a number of times, apparently.
Correct.
I really liked it. I really liked Antiporno. It didn't make my top three, but I really liked it. Nissan too?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I think it was a bit exhausting for my personal taste, but I mean that's Sion Sono. That's what he does. Yeah, no, I really liked it. I really liked what it had to say. I really liked the way it said it. It's a good movie that I would always recommend. My number three is Hexan. Hexan, I think this ticks a couple of my personal boxes. I love the silent films, especially like these expressionist silent horror films. That's my jam. I love those. I hadn't seen Hexan and I always wanted to. I was surprised by the drastic imagery of it. I am really interested in what it talked about. Also these I don't know, witch cult thingies. Back then, I think they only just started talking about what had happened in Europe and about these cults and about what they might have been doing and the way it's depicted these medieval ideas. There's a lot in Hexan for me to appreciate, and it's also quite funny and quite modern in many ways. So yeah, I was surprised by it. It really surprised me. Is there hate against Hexan?
No. I don't think it's that memorable, but yeah, it was a good, okay movie.
No, I like Texan too.
So, Nissan, what's your number two?
An Elephant Sitting Still.
An Elephant Sitting Still. Yeah, that's my number two too, actually. Oh, so let's talk about it a little bit. I remember when we watched it in several sessions, but all over one night. When it started, we were both kind of against it. We were anti An Elephant Sitting Still. Is it by any chance your number two too?
No, it's not, but it was a good movie.
An Elephant Sitting Still, start slow, stay slow, but it was like so dark, right?
Yeah, and one of the big pros of the movie is that one of the, it made so much sense that after that we read that he was like big, he was inspired by Bellatar and that he was his mentor and stuff. After watching Elephant Sitting Still, I feel like I kind of understood Bellatar movies better because that guy was like, was more of my generation. So I could understand his language. I mean, language.
Chinese?
his
Oh, that was so ignorant of me.
Expression.
Because, more, you know, there's several Chinese languages.
Not Hungarian, then Bellatar. Shut up, you know what I mean? So because this podcast has so many of Bellatar movies, I think that was kind of an important part. Because for me, everything what didn't work for me back then with Bellatar movies, he nailed them.
Yeah. And I think this movie
that's
really...
not the only thing, but I wanted to add that because I think it's important for a podcast because we watch like 10 Bellatar movies by now.
Yeah, I love that. This movie really transports a mood, I think. And it's a very, very dark mood and a very particular mood, but I think it does it really well. Yaren, what's your number two?
Ooh, After the Rehearsal.
Yes, that's a fantastic movie. Do talk about it.
I can't. I just want to say I really enjoy stage like or theater like movies, and it really spoke to me. And I mean, dialogue heavy movies are always great.
Yeah, right? Somehow people always hate on dialogue and say how dialogue is boring. I think the opposite is true, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I agree to that too.
So that's
also really liked After the Rehearsal.
Yeah, me too. I loved it.
And I also think general in those kind of movies or Ingmar Bergman movies that it's so impressive that, you know, same thing what I said with a ghost story, and a ghost story needed lots of effects, that he can make something so simple so big.
Yeah. That's, I think, my favorite term that we came up with. We try to come up with a term every week, and I like intimate universalism a lot. And I think that's something that I really aspire to when making films. I would like to go more into directions like that. The cat started attacking the cupboard for some reason. Dear listeners, I will take you behind the scenes of Mysterium Pictorum now, because earlier today, Yaren, we had a discussion about the compatibility of theater and films, because I was thinking about maybe getting funding for a film studio by misleading the funding places into thinking I was like
can't
doing
say
a,
that on record now.
They don't speak English, so what? It's Germany. Ignorant peasants.
Stop it! You need their money.
What I wanted to say is, we were talking about this. I was thinking about maybe saying, okay, so we live in the times of pandemic. We will live in these times for the next 10 years. There will be lockdowns over winter. There won't be an audience for theater, so we need theater without an audience. But just filming theater, in my mind, doesn't work for most people. So do something on a stage in a confined place with just a few actors and film it cinematically, like Fassbinder did a lot. And I think After the Rehearsal is an example of that. That kind of film could come out of a studio like that.
I mean, yeah, it uses like effects that would be really hard to be done on a stage. But I would still say it's more of a staged movie rather than what you have in mind, or as far as I understood.
Yeah, okay. It's a bit more about being set on a stage than what I would do. Yeah, but I think this it is somewhere on the intersection between film and theater, which I find interesting to explore.
Sure. I mean, I would watch it.
See? I mean, I would force you to. Yeah. So okay, so our number ones are Nissan.
Bacurau.
Bacurau. Yeah. I loved it.
Bacurau.
Yours too?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So both of you guys, Bacurau, it didn't make my top three, but that's just because both of you had it on your list and I thought that would be boring. Bacurau, fantastic movie, right? Talk about it for a bit.
Oh, I talk too much already.
You really don't.
You just complained about how we don't let you speak. What the fuck?
Yeah, it was like the perfect movie because I'm a child by heart. I like movies about justice because that never happens in reality. So I need that in my movies. I like the characters, that they were so badass. There was this TikTok fuckboy who was like this guerrilla guy. There was those naked couple. That was like the best naked scene ever. And usually I hate small towns. And I also hated how they're portrayed, like they're usually portrayed as horrible as they are. And still, it is supposed to be a good thing. Like we talk about it so many times on this podcast. But I loved the community, how they stick together and how they were so badass, fighting for their town, for their community. I also thought it was like it had really feminist effects without that it looked like it's forced. I never saw that how it was portrayed, that like the whole town, also the men, were they took so well care of their prostitutes and knew it was like the horrible thing that they have to do. So they protected them. And I really loved how it was portrayed. Yeah, I think for me, it was like a bloody badass sitcom because they were such a great family together. And it made me like warm in my heart.
Yeah, the small town community worked a bit like Stars Hollow and Gilmore Girls. So Bacurau is Gilmore Girls when Stars Hollow is under attack. And Nissan, wouldn't you love that? Just imagine Stars Hollow under attack and like Taylor being badass, like with guns blazing.
But like the people from Bacurau were...
Miss Patty, how she would...
Yeah, it would be great. I would love to see a nude scene with Miss Patty.
All right, Yaren, do you agree about Stars Hollow?
What's your first top movie?
No, wait, you said nothing about Bacurau yet.
I think she said everything that's possible, like even tying it to Gilmore Girls. I think that's...
I did that.
Anyway, what's your favorite movie?
My favorite movie of this year of Mysterium Pictorum was Shatan Tango. Did not make any of your top three lists. But you guys, actually, I think this was one of my favorite cinematic experiences. I think this was very engaging, very immersive. I talked about how I find them kind of comfy, these Bellatar films.
Which makes you a really weird person.
it had really interesting characters. I was glued to it the whole time, even though it was 7 hours and moving really slow. I think it was incredibly sad in between. It was very profound. It talked about like political things, philosophical things, all at once without ever being pretentious. It had more dialogue than Bellatar films usually have. I like the music. I really loved the whole cast of this film and just the way it looks, these stark black and white images, this uncomfortable weather, these depressing towns. I don't know. I think this is a really, to me, like, yeah, Bacurau, you know, that's a fun ideal. But that's not what small towns are like. Small towns are like Shatan Tango. All of them, always. And Shatan Tango somehow compresses the small town experience in a poetic way. It's like a really long poem about something terrible that is a small town. And about so much more. We have a very long episode about Shatan Tango. We've recorded it. It will be out later than this episode, but it's really long. We had a lot to talk about. I think there's a lot in there. And if I watch a challenging movie, that's what I want from it. I think we watched it right after Beyond the Black Rainbow, which is for me the perfect counterexample. Mm-hmm. Like Beyond the Black Rainbow was exhausting and slow and long, and there was nothing behind that. That was just a bubble of boredom. And then there's Shatan Tango.
It was like 5 hours shorter and still.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's
entertaining.
And then there's Shatan Tango, and it takes this time, but there's actually enough in there. Like it doesn't feel like time wasted. Yes, it's exhausting. Yes, it's challenging, but I think it's worth it. And it's even a thing that I, not right now, not soon, but I would watch it again and then don't like watching stuff again. But like, for example, a screening of this in a cinema with an audience, maybe with an intermission, maybe without one, but like maybe with a Q&A with Bellatar afterwards, that would be like my perfect day in the cinema. I would love that. I loved it. I don't know why isn't it in your top three?
It was an enjoyable movie. I mean, despite the fact that it's so long, it's still watchable. But I don't know. It feels like pretentious to say, "Ooh, Shatan Tango is my favorite movie."
Oh, it's not. It's not. It's not. It's not my favorite movie that I watched this year. I'm going to talk about my favorite movie this year. It's not pretentious. I don't know. I'm not afraid of being pretentious, or, you know, I'm not afraid of being perceived as an intellectual, because I'm a bit of an intellectual.
Visionary too.
Or visionary too, yeah. All right, our three favorite movies outside of Mysterium Pictorum, because believe it or not, but we do watch more movies than the ones we talk about here. And what kinds of movies, you might ask? You will find out. Nissan, let's start with your number three movie of 2021. I will specify not made in 2021, because we're not film critics. We are filmmakers and a secret agent. We have challenging lives outside of watching movies. So I looked at my my letterbox, I've seen two movies from 2021. One of them I made. So, but these are the films that we watched in 2021. Nisan, your number three movie that you watched in 2021.
Okay, first, I feel like I need to explain myself. I really like, because we are watching like every week these Mysterium Pictorum movies, so I really like watching like trashy movies or serious comfort stuff, just because sometimes the Mysterium Pictorum ones are a little bit exhausting. Sometimes the trashy movies are exhausting and boring too. They're not always entertaining. So my top three will be more a little bit different to my Mysterium Pictorum top three. And I felt like I need to explain that. I had like 10 movies and I was thinking, and now I made my top three while we were talking. My number three movie is Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde.
I love it. I love it. So talk a bit about it.
Because, okay, the premise is like, it doesn't make sense. It's really stupid. There's this guy.
It's a Hammer movie. We tried getting into Hammer films and we succeeded.
Yeah. And I don't know how it starts.
He wants to live forever. And his secret to life is that somehow, apparently, females live forever.
What do you think? So
female hormones make you live longer.
So that's how it all starts. And he starts to kill women.
Because that's how you get female hormones. You kill women and you take those hormones from them, bitches.
He's like also a doctor or something, right?
Yeah, he's a doctor. He's
like working on this magic.
Dr. Jekyll.
He's Dr. Jekyll, he's sure. He's like working on this magical, not magical, the scientific potion how to live forever.
And he has Burke and Hare kill people for him, kill women. You know, but Burke and Hare from the body snatchers, the famous body snatchers from Edinburgh. All right, so, okay.
So anyway, then...
It's Jack the Ripper is mixed in with, like he's Jack the Ripper. Oh, no! Jack the Ripper is a woman!
First he kills, like, this woman. No, first he pays, like, some gangsters to
Burke and Hare, yes.
Yeah, sorry. And then...
Why are you telling the whole movie?
Sorry. I used to say...
This is the Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde bonus episode.
And then, okay, well, to keep it short, then he becomes a woman, but then he becomes a man again. So it's always, he's struggling...
Like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
He's struggling between Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde. And he introduces himself as Sister Hyde.
When he
has also like this love story as Sister Hyde with this guy who's
the brother of his love interest as Dr. Jekyll.
As Dr. Jekyll. And it's like really funny and also, I don't know, it had like this trans subtext. I thought
text
and I was like thinking, is it offensive or
yes
or is it progressive, because for that time not that you know the thing that they're like talking about it,
it's not fun really. That's what it is.
But then yes, it, of course it's also offensive. But, no, you should never say but. But like I read like articles that that trans people like this movie.
Yeah, they do have humor, those trans people. Don't let Twitter lie to you. but this movie is awesome. Like the first time he turns into Sister Hyde, it's so amazing. Like this actress is so funny because she goes in front of the mirror and then she feels her boobs and she's really happy about that. It's so good. It's such a good movie. You've never seen it?
I've seen Fatty Professor.
No. Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde, it's a semi-serious horror film. It's a Hammer horror. You need to watch it.
I'm sure.
Go watch it. It's fantastic. It's really good. Yeah. Nisan, that's a worthy choice. Yaron, what's your number three movie of this year?
I'll raise the bar a bit.
Let's see. That was a strong first entry, but okay.
The latest movie of the director and writer of Portrait of a Lady on Fire called Petite Maman. And I don't like giving Maman. out spoilers like you guys, so I'm just going to say it's a movie from the eyes of a kid who is going through some transformative life trauma.
Yeah, I haven't even seen Portrait of a Lady on Fire because Nissan thinks it looks boring, so we didn't watch it. But I really want to. Portrait of a Lady on Fire. It's a thing that I have suggested like 5 or 6 times and you always said, ah, it looks boring. Let's watch Game of Thrones.
I don't know what you're talking about. Sounds like me.
Anyway, she's a good director, I think. And I'm a sucker for any movie that's through the eyes of a kid.
Yeah, that's always like really, really a dramatic thing to do, right? I think it's often quite depressing. Have you seen Tigers Are Not Afraid?
No.
Oh, you need to watch it by Issa Lopez, also female filmmaker.
I was thinking of that movie too while you were talking about.
Yeah, it's a bit manipulative, honestly, but it's also it's hard hitting and it's quite good, quite good.
I mean, as a tool, if it's used right, it's always a great storytelling device, I think.
All right, my number 3 movie is Messiah of Evil. This is an interesting little thing. It's written by screenwriters who were also in some capacity involved later on in Star Wars and American Graffiti and some other bigger Hollywood projects. It's an independent horror film. And it's like it was made for me. Like if you, dear listener, have seen my Cthulhu trilogy, especially Why Hans Wagner Hates the Starry Sky, it's very, very similar in many ways. Like Messiah of Evil is better, obviously. But those people had more money. No, it's very Lovecraftian. It's about this woman who is looking for her father. Her father is an artist, and he goes. She goes to the Californian coastal town where he lives, and she can't find him. And then she runs into some hippies who are around there. There's some shenanigans going on, and you quickly find out that there's something really creepy going on in that town. Something creepy has come to that town, something ancient and evil. And yeah, I wouldn't say much more about it. It's really creepy. There's fun stuff in here. There's zombies in here that I wasn't expecting. And I usually hate zombie films, but zombies done as weird fiction instead of like disease bullshit. Really interesting, really good, really moody film too, like a Lucio Fulci film in a way, but a bit more coherent, not much more coherent. It's really weird and I don't know. I really loved it. I don't know if I've completely understood it, but that's the beauty of it too. And it's a good Lovecraftian horror film that's like they made it for me. I loved it and I would recommend it to anyone. Nissan, what's your number 2?
Scream. I'm not sure it's because I just watched it recently, like a couple days ago for the first time. Honestly, it has everything what I like. It is like late 90s, early 2000s, whatever. And all those actors from that time. It has like an actress from France.
Joshua Jackson randomly shows up in Scream 2.
Yeah, sure. Yes, I forget about that. Or Buffy. It's really funny, but it's also, I thought like, it was really scary. We screamed a couple times. And I also love that it's so nerdy about movies and like horror movies, but also movies in general. And I like the dialogues and I never knew anything about Scream. I only watched Scary Movie, like a proper millennial, like as a teenager. I didn't expect it to be bad or so. I thought I'm going to like it, but I really, 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 really loved it. And I can't wait for Scream 3.
So, Jaren, that's another film that you're kind of anti on.
I don't think it's merited discussion on this. So.
All right, what's your number 2?
Again, I'm raising the bar. It's a Romanian movie that's also recent, like 2021. So I'm ahead of
Ooh-hoo.
Yeah, it's called Bad Luck Banging or Loony Pawn.
I haven't even heard about it. What's it about?
It's a comedy movie. Again, I don't want to give out a lot of information on it. It's just a movie about a teacher, female teacher, whose sex video was released on the internet. And they're having a meeting with the, I guess, Parents Association to decide on her fate. So it's the moments that leads up to the meeting and the actual meeting. It's really fun. I would highly recommend it.
Yeah, that sounds really funny. That too, I want to watch now. Yeah, I like your recommendations. Here's my number two, Carnival of Souls. Carnival of Souls is a black and white film by, I think, one-time filmmaker. It's from the 60s. It's on the Criterion Channel. Anyone can watch it there. It's about this woman who, she's in an accident in the beginning of the film with like four of her friends are in her car with her. They race a couple of dudes. They fall into the water and she's the only one surviving. The others all die. And now she's like all alone. And she moves to a new city, taking a job as the organist there. And then a guy weirdly follows her. And she sees a carnival where weird people are dancing and things just start getting weirder and weirder and weirder. And like this movie, again, this sometimes happens that I watch a movie and it's like, wow, this was made for me right now. Because Carnival of Souls deals a lot with the feeling of like unreality during this pandemic. At some points, I work in live television, and it was so weird, these empty studios, and in there these aging stars who I knew as when they were young, when I was a child, and now they were still there doing the same thing but without an audience, and it felt like this endless loop, and they were aging in this empty nothingness. And just looking at that, sometimes I thought, like, am I dead? Have I died? Like the world in general has felt so dead, and like stuff you didn't have an immediate effect because everything was done over the internet. And this film deals with that feeling, weirdly, feeling like something's not quite right anymore. And then also there's a whole plot line in here where a guy wants to spend time with her a lot. And that too was a thing last year, I think, in my life, when people wanted to spend a lot of time with me and I couldn't really get rid of them. And that the horror of that really, really spoke to me. So Carnival of Souls, a fantastic film. It's a cliche to recommend it. Everybody is raving about it at this point. So I'm late to the party. I feel like my top three is really, really lame. But yeah, there you have it. Carnival of Souls, I loved it. Nissan, what's your number one film of this year?
Before I get to it, I just remembered another movie we watched this year. We didn't talk about it today. We also watched, was it The Host? Like this Corona movie.
We watched it this year, The Host?
I think so.
By Bong Joon-ho. Really big blockbuster.
No. No, this webcam movie.
Oh, that The Host. Yes, that was good. I mean, this is funny because the other Host by Bong Joon-ho also feels like a Corona movie because, you know, it's about a pandemic, I think, even whatever. Yeah, The Host, yes, on Shudder. That was a great film.
And I think it's a shame that we forgot it. Maybe I would consider it to put it in my top three list.
That was so scary. Have you seen The Host?
I'm not sure. I have to check.
But I just wanted to, you know, make an
honorable mentions. Yeah,
my top one is, I don't consider it as a trashy movie like the other two I said, but I think many people do. So it's Jennifer's Body.
Yeah, that's a fantastic one. It's on the Criterion Channel, so it's art, certified art.
I think it's like from 2017 or so, right? I watched it this year for the first time. This is like a movie I would not like to spoiler because, you know, there are some very interesting twists to it. But first of all, it was really great and entertaining and funny, but also very sad and dark. And I this goes to all very, very great horror movies or even semi-good horror movies. But if you like take out all the genre fantasy effects from Jennifer's Body, it's a really sad story. I feel like if I tell it, then I will spoiler all the greatness about the movie. So you should just watch it.
Yeah, I really absolutely love Jennifer's Body too. Jaren, what's your number one movie of the year 2021?
Again, it's a movie from 2021, actually.
Boring. You're putting us to shame. We watched lots of series.
Yeah. I did too. It's called Wheel of Fortune and Fantasy. It's a Japanese movie. It's just a combination of three short stories, but again, it's more dialogue heavy. And it's well done, I think. I would recommend it. Again, I don't want to give out anything.
You sent me that. I'm looking at the IMDb page that you have open. You sent us that and said we should watch it. Yeah. Still, your pitch doesn't really work, but I want to watch it just because you love it so much.
I don't like to pitch stuff based on, you know, giving out information on them.
Yeah, okay. I think the thing is, I watched a lot of stuff this year that I didn't love.
No, I mean, me too, definitely. And these are all coincidentally just 2021 movies.
No, I mean, not from this year. I mean, this year in general.
That's what I mean. Like, these are, since they were released this year, most likely I watched it in the last 2 months. And before then, it's almost all shit movies.
Yeah, it's weird. Like because I feel so weird giving out these sort of classics as my top three recommendations. But I did watch a lot of stuff that is more out of the way, like Echo Azarak, for example, which is good. But nah, did I love it as much as I loved my number one, Scream? Which was so good. We watched it in our home theater and I was screaming, I was laughing, I was having so much fun with it. Matthew Lillard was in it. He's so much fun. There are such obscure horror film references. Kevin Williamson really knows his horror. And I mean, Wes Craven, he can direct a horror picture.
And like, he cried when Rose McGowan died.
Yes, they killed Rose McGowan. Like, why would you do that?
Have you seen Sherlock, the series?
I have seen parts of it and then I got bored. Like, after Moriarty died, it really wasn't worth my time anymore.
Okay. Do you remember Sherlock's brother?
You mean Mark Gatiss?
Yeah, that guy. So he has a show on classical horror cinema.
I know. I watched it.
Okay, cool. Good job.
Yeah, no, he's awesome. Okay, so Jaren is going to smoke more substances on the balcony. And I think we're through, right? That was...
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year, everyone! And Merry Christmas! And that was nice. That was nice, you guys.
Wrapping up Mysterium Pictorum 2021, but we will come back. Yeah. Yes, we are 2021.
Yeah, 2021. So 2022 will have a lot of films that I'm looking forward to, especially like the Blade trilogy, for example, and other stuff.
Coming up soon.
All right, you guys, thank you for listening. That was it from my end. Anything to add, you guys?
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.